Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is a different starting time for us here this afternoon. I was getting ready to say this morning on Off the Shelf. As I was telling our guest, our very special guest today, I got up early this morning after writing to over after three in the morning. I didn't get to bed working on some writing projects, but I got up early this morning, went down to the Neshaminy State Park in Bensalem, which is not real close to where I live, and they had the polar bear plunge down there, and it was to raise money for the Special Olympics radio station. I think it was WYSP was sponsoring it. And they, if you remember the redhead guy from the Partridge Family, Danny, I think it's Badavucci, I forget how you spell his name. He was there and he plunged. And anyway, about 900 people showed up to actually take the plunge, and they raised about $100,000 for Special Olympics. I thought that was just fabulous. It was a crowd of people down there, so I really enjoyed that. That's how I started my morning, and now that's why we, instead of our normal 11 o'clock starting time for Off the Shelf, was moved to 2, because I didn't get home till after 1 o'clock. So I want to welcome those of you who are tuning in, our regular listeners, and I so appreciate you as we are in our seventh year here at Off the Shelf of being on the air on Blog Talk Radio and also on Blake Radio on the Rainbow Soul Channel. So welcome to those of you tuning in for the first time or for one of many, many times for this Saturday, January the 29th, 2011. I'm so glad that you're here with us. For those who are tuning in for the first time, I want to introduce myself. I'm your host, Denise Turney, and I'm coming to you live from the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where we got so much snow still on the ground. And as always and again, I thank you for your support. And I encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of Long Walk Up. Long Walk Up is a powerfully moving, inspirational book. If there's a goal you're trying to reach, you feel like something's stopping you or something is too hard, Long Walk Up will give you the inspiration to move forward and walk right on into your destiny. And you can pick up a copy of Long Walk Up today by visiting www.chistell.com. Again, that's chistell.com. You can also pick up a copy of Long Walk Up at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Walmart, etc. And if you don't see it on the bookstore shelves, just ask the clerk for it because it's carried by the largest book distributors in the world, and I would appreciate your support as I am the author of the book, Long Walk Up. And now I must tell you that we have a very special guest with us here this afternoon at Off the Shelf. And that special guest is author Judith Woolcock. Judith is a native of Jamaica. She came to the United States in 1969. She is the author of the books The Fable Singer and Night Crimes. She attended Fordham University, where she earned a Bachelor of Arts degree, and then she went on to earn her Master's degree in philosophy. Prior to writing full-time, Judith taught English, analytical thinking, and research skills at schools in New York City. She is the wife of a retired New York City police officer, and as I was doing researching for the article and going through her bio and what I was going to say as I introduced her, I'm thinking, wow, she's school teacher, master's degree in philosophy, wife of a retired New York City police officer. I thought, man, she's got a lot of material for a lot of great books and with her life experiences. And so we are so honored to have Judith Woolcock with us here this afternoon on Off the Shelf. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Judith.
Thank you for that introduction, Denise, but it's Judith Woolcock Colombo, because most people will find my books on the Colombo, not Woolcock.
Okay. Judith Woolcock Colombo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most people find my books on the Judith Colombo, although
okay,
it's listed on the Judith Woolcock Colombo, but usually mostly on the Colombo, because I use Woolcock as my middle name.
Oh, okay.
That's Judith Woolcock Colombo.
All right, Judith. Look for Judith Woolcock Colombo.
Or just Judith Colombo.
Judith Colombo. And again, The Fable Singer and Night Crimes, which we're going to talk about here
yes
today. In your home country, Jamaica. I wanted to ask you, when you were a child, was reading books something like a favorite pastime that
yes.
you and your family did?
Yes, yes. I grew up in a very book-oriented family, and I was encouraged very much to read books. You know, we had, I didn't have a television in my home until I was 12 years old, and my parents encouraged us to read a lot. My adventures started reading books. You know, I'd read adventure stories and dream a lot about books, and I read English children's stories like The Five Fine Outers and you know, the children classics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Dickens and other stories like that.
Okay. Was there
Expectations, David Copperfield.
Okay. You did a lot of wonderful authors. Those names are very familiar to me. Was there a specific event, Judith, and I like to ask our guests this, was there a specific event that caused you to know, like, hey, I'm a writer? Was there something specific that happened that caused you to realize that?
No, I don't think so. I just love to make up stories as a child, and I love to act them out. I used to make up adventures and play in the backyard, you know. I used to be a lady knight, and I'd take a broom, it became my horse, and gallop around the,
wow.
the backyard and have my little sister as my squire. You know, Jamaica was a British colony until 1962, so knights were part of my history lesson at school, and I just like to make up stories, and my mother encouraged me to write them down, so I started writing from age 8. My spelling was atrocious, you know, so my mother would laugh every time she'd read my stories, and I she was sort of laughing at my spelling, mm-hmm. but they wouldn't tell me that, and she wouldn't, you know, we would discuss my stories and
mm-hmm.
you'd offer suggestions and things like that. And a lot of my stories would be based in Jamaican folk tales and, you know, tales of Anansi, which were West mm-hmm. African stories, mixed with a lot of European folk tales and different Chinese stories. Because, you know, Jamaica is a blend of people just like America is. And
right.
So a lot of my stories were a blend of our history and stuff like that.
Well, you had a very, I listened to you, the way you would create stories and then act them out, a very lively imagination, what I think is wonderful, and as children, many of us do have that. You also have a master's degree in philosophy. Judith, do you find that your philosophical impressions or perceptions, and I'm just thinking about the titles of your stories and reading some of the background on your stories, but do you think that finds its way into your stories? And if so, could you give us one to two examples of how your philosophy, which you earned your master's in, how that background made its way into one or two stories that you wrote?
Well, actually, I don't really know on a conscious level, but maybe on a subconscious level. Like in Night Crimes, there's a character called the Death Angel, and he has a very clear philosophy on when one should commit crimes, that anyone who commits crimes in the daylight is flaunting his crimes. He isn't ashamed of them, and that if you commit crimes in the night, you're supposedly ashamed, that to commit a crime is to be ashamed of it, but you can't help yourself or something like that. I'm not really sure on a conscious level, but every time you write a book, I think you put part of yourself, and even if you haven't studied philosophy, your ideas, your philosophy of life, which everyone has on some level, seeps into your work.
Mm.
You know, and I think that does with me. Like, for instance, in Fable Singer, my fantasy, which is set in the Caribbean, I long ago when I wrote it, this psychologist got in touch with me and asked me if I studied Jungian theory, because I had archetypes, Jungian archetypes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had no idea that I had Jungian archetypes in it.
Ah.
And I may have had, I may have put it in an unconscious level, and you know, part of certain philosophy in Jungian. I did study philosophy of the emotions at one point, which overlaps with psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all study archetypes at some level. And it may have seeped into Singer, but I didn't, you don't do it.
You
at
didn't intend to do
level,
it.
You know,
right.
So I couldn't really say, but I'm sure, you know, mm-hmm. when you write, we write within our code of morals and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, and it's interesting, as a writer, I remember when I first started writing, I tried so, so hard not to insert any part of myself into a story. And then after, I don't forget how many novels I wrote, I would go back sometimes and read parts of it, and I would say, oh, my gosh, that's like me. Oh, my gosh. And then I realized the artist's material is really the artist's life. It the perceptions of the world, that's where the material that, like if you're a musician, a painter, whatever you create, it's coming from within you. And there's just no way to separate yourself.
You can't.
If
you did that, you wouldn't be you. Your work would be just like somebody else's.
Yes.
You can't separate the art from the artist.
Right.
For instance, if you read Alice Walker, you know, she's very, very angry if you read some of her early works. She seems so angry in her early works, you know?
Yeah.
She keeps bringing in that thing with her eye, our brother took her eye, you know, and you know she was so angry at that.
Yeah, and so as the artists, we work through our own personal things, through our characters, without realizing. Even when we intend not to do it, it just is something that happens. I wanted to ask you, while you taught English in New York City, did you meet students, and this is interesting to me, who you knew would go on to become writers or that will leave a lasting mark on the literary field? And if so, could you tell us about one or two of those experiences?
I don't know if I met any exceptional students
mm-hmm.
who would go on to become great writers.
Mm-hmm.
I met students who I knew had the ability to write, but I met individuals who I thought would go on to make a lasting impression on other people and who I thought were great individuals who had overcome a great many obstacles in their life just to reach the classroom.
Mm.
I taught in the inner city, and many of my students, in average, if you met them in their earlier life, shouldn't have been in the classroom.
Mm.
You'd expect them not to be in the classroom, and just by being in the classroom, that achieved like a miracle. And,
right.
You know, and many of them were outstanding individuals. I met one.
Oh, it's so good to hear you say that, because we often hear just the opposite. And I think it's amazing as a teacher. Not amazing, but I appreciate as a teacher that you noticed what some of the children had, what they were faced with just to get to school.
Yeah.
You know, not let alone complete it.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that you did that, and that is just to get to school.
Yeah, I taught one or two creative writing courses,
mm-hmm.
and those students, in my later years, one or two would become good writers, but most of the courses I taught, which I chose to teach, were remedial writing, and then modes of analysis, which like at New Rochelle, the students had to pass. Psychologist student, any student had to pass how to do a research paper, how to take write it, how to take a material and analyze it and put it together, and how to think, how to write. And many of those students were good writers, and I think could go on to become very good writers.
Wow, that would be wonderful to one day go to a bookstore or read a wonderful story and say, oh, my goodness, this person was in my class. Is Judith The Fable Singer your first novel?
Yes.
And then I want to ask, when did you write Night Crimes? and I wanted to ask you a little something else about Night Crimes, but is The Fable Singer, is that your first novel that you wrote?
The first novel I wrote was when I was 14, and it's in a couple of my math books, and I threw it away, but my first published novel was The Fable Singer, yes.
Okay. Please tell our listeners here at Off the Shelf just enough about The Fable Singer, what it's about, just to whet our appetites, but not enough to give the story away. Just give us a little bit of background.
Well, The Fable Singer is it's a fantasy, and it's set in the Caribbean, and it involves the magic realism of the Caribbean. You know, in the Caribbean, the culture is really magical realism. We live in the real world, but our world also evolves the other half, which is the spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's set in the old fable singer is a shaman of great power, and a responsibility is to the villages in which she's not just a spiritual head of the villages, but she's also their healer and their spiritual mentor. And one of her chief responsibility is to send the soul, sing the soul, into the shadow world. Without the fable singer there, the soul can't cross over into the next world. But now she's old and she's dying. And she hasn't fulfilled her primary responsibility in choosing an apprentice to follow her.
Mm-hmm.
And the villagers are not certain if it's because she just hasn't found among their daughters the girl with that power,
mm-hmm.
or she just didn't want to, she was reluctant to pass on the power. And, but the spirits have taken that responsibility away from her, and they've now chosen someone else. And the person they've chosen is a young girl who's not of the villages, but she's outside of them. She's a young upper caste girl, and
mm-hmm.
Marcia, and she doesn't believe in magic. She doesn't believe in the world of magic.
Ah.
But she has power within her, and she's led by a series of dreams into the mountains, and she becomes the fable singer's apprentice.
Wow.
And the story is how she develops into the fable singer, and then they begin. The conflict is between the world of the fable singer and the fable singer. And it's really a battle between good and evil, because there's also the fable singer's counterpart, the Obia man. Because in my culture in Jamaica, there's the struggle between good and evil. And
mm-hmm.
Obia is seen as almost like evil witchcraft. And there's
okay.
a struggle between good and evil, and I can't tell you the rest, but...
Oh, okay. I was listening to you, and thank you for sharing that, Judith. Mm-hmm. I was listening to you, and it just brought... Oh, my goodness. As you talked about the book, and you talked about the fable singers getting older and need to find an apprentice or someone to keep this, it continuing to replace her. And I recently read a book. I can see the cover. There's an older man with a long beard on the cover of it. I got it when I was shopping at Target a couple of weeks ago. I don't recall just now the title of the book, but it was something similar to that. And in this story, there was a man who kept all the memories for the town because the people could not continue to live their happy lives if they remembered war, if they remembered somebody starving, if they remembered these things. So, and actually something similar to that is how the Buddha got his start, because his father tried to protect him from negative things as well. And then he started to see people do die, they do starve, and that's how he became the Buddha in his quest to learn more and then to try to end human suffering through meditating and chanting and whatnot. But back to the story I read, the man had that they had to find somebody, and the people in the town, they would observe the elders, the young people, and they know who was best to be going to maybe coaching or music or teaching this or that. And this one kid was picked to replace the memory the guy who kept all the memories. I forget the name of it. And oh my goodness, when he shared with him these wonderful memories, it felt so good. But it was when he started to share the bad memories. He's like, this job can be painful, but it's a job somebody has to do. So it made me think about the fable singer, his role that picked out to replace. When you think about the world, it seems like that happens. You see somebody leave or pass away, and somebody else sort of just step up and fill that spot. I wonder as I love how the girl in the fable singer, she goes from feeling insecure to embodying enough confidence to perform these feats that make her appear to be like a superhero. Why did you decide to take her from where she appears weak and in lacking confidence, and then you worked with her until she came into her own strength? Why didn't you start her out?
Because in Hawa culture, what I did was I took a lot of the African mythology and Native American mythology, Jamaica, Tana Indians, and wove that mythology together, which makes up part of Jamaican culture, or Caribbean culture, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the old magic of the Caribbean, you know, African, like in Haiti or Brazil, or all those things woven together. But a lot of the upper class, the people who are more European educated, tend not to try to believe in that. And she didn't believe in this. She didn't believe in this inner magic that she has. And she's raised not to believe in that. And you don't believe in things outside of you that magic exists. You believe in things that you can see and touch and feel.
Right, right.
So she was not confident in that world. And, you know, she, it's explained in the book that her mother had died, and, I think her mother committed suicide, her mother had died. She was destined to marry Juan Pert, this young man, and she wasn't really confident in her world. She, you know, she always felt at odds with her world. She wasn't comfortable in it because this was the power working in her. She really didn't belong in that world, but she didn't. You know, she really belonged in the fable singer's world. That's where she really belonged. And she had to find her way into that world and realize that not everything that you don't see and you can't see or touch is real. The world is more than what you can see and touch and feel.
Yes, yes. And I think people, more and more people are starting to see that and accept that. And I want to let our listeners know Judith has got a little sore throat, and we thank her and appreciate her for doing the interview today, even with her sore throat. Besides the fable singer herself, and she sounds like a very interesting character, and I like how you said she tries to exist in this world, which makes her appear perhaps lacking confidence or insecure, but she's trying to exist in a world that she really is not designed to fit into, and so she has to, what some people call coming into your own. Besides this amazing character who becomes the fable singer, what other characters in the book will grab readers so that they will not be able to get enough of these characters?
Well, the old woman will grab them, the first fable singer, and Marcia, the young girl, will grab them. Those are the two main characters. I also made the antagonist, Calvin, the Obia man. I think that he should have an impact on them, and they'll grab him. This was my first novel, and I think that if I had to rewrite it, I'd make it larger, and I'd develop his character more and make it more sympathetic. You know, I'm sorry.
No. You are absolutely fine. You're doing phenomenal, Judith, and I appreciate you. And this the fable singer, one other question. The older fable singer who had to find a apprentice, and since she didn't, the spirits did find the young girl to replace her. Does she lose her powers, the older fable singer, as she gets older?
But she will die. And when she dies, she will leave the village. She's not just their healer. She's like the shaman of the village, the person who, when you're sick and when you have a spiritual need, she's like a priest and a doctor all roll into one. So you go to her when you need your body healed. You go to her for your spiritual consultation. And when you're dying, you need someone to send you across to the spirit land. There's a myth at the beginning in the prologue which tells the creation myth of Akampam, the god that existed in all his glory, but he's alone and he's sad and he creates someone to be with him, the Sasambosam. But the Sasambosam is a shadow and he's not equal to Akampam, and Akampam can't love him, so he creates human beings who he can love and protect. And the Sasambosam is jealous, so he breathes on these human beings and he corrupts part of them. And then the myth goes on to explain about the Mayas, the priests of Akampam, and how the people of the humans, to the land of the humans who worship Akampam, come other humans, and they're taken away and brought to this other land. And the Mayas, religion blend with the religion of these other peoples, the fable singer religion, and but at the height of their, the fable singer is always a woman. The Mayas can be male or female, and when the people are free, they retreat to the most primitive villages, and their healers are always fable women. They're always fable singers, but at the height of their powers, they can be full Mayas. And this is fable singer is a Maya, but she retains the title of fable singer. And but the people also took with them the religion of the Obi, the snake god, and that comes also from the religion that was brought to Jamaica. The African Obi means the snake. And it comes because when they were taken by these other people, they didn't want the God of mercy. They didn't want the merciful, forgiving God. They wanted the God of vengeance.
Yeah.
And they began to worship the Obi man. They wanted to worship the God of vengeance, Obi. And so the Sasambosam also comes with them. And so now you have two gods there. The Sasambosam, and so you have the Obia man, and you have the fable singer, and that's who Marcia does battle with. And in the end, he becomes a full mile, and the Obia man, who's also what tell about, and how he becomes a full he becomes the image of the Sasambosam. So they're now equal, and I'm giving the whole story away. And that's that is the final battle. And it's done on Earth, but it's also a full cosmic battle.
It's still, the story is still interesting because the characters are intriguing. The fable singer and are these other, the people who challenge her, who also have powers, are these based on real life beliefs that came from Africa to Jamaica?
Some of it is made up, you know. Some of it is a bit of European myth. Some of it is African, and a lot of it is African and Native American myth. Some of it is, you know, imagination. A lot of it is research, you know.
Wow. Judith, you definitely, I got to tell you, 7 years going into 7 years on Off the Shelf, I can tell you, even when we started and you said you just go out in the backyard with your dog, your sister, and play play out this role, acting out these stories created. You have a very, very open imagination, and even as I was researching for this interview, I said, you are a I don't know what you say, a true artist, but you definitely create from within and not from, okay, let me write a story. Do I think what's popular now? Let me do that. Let me write a story. A lot of people will read or buy. You are an artist. You create from within, and I really respect and appreciate that. When did you write Night Crimes? How long after?
Oh, many years after. I wrote Fabulous Singer in, it was published in 89 by Cross In Press, and mm-hmm. then Cross In Press stopped publishing novels and started publishing New Age cookbooks, and mm-hmm. Fabulous Singer went out of print, and then it was republished by the Authors Guild and back in print.com, and iUniverse published it for them, but they're the publishers. And then Night Crimes was published by America House in 2001,
mm-hmm.
and America House was bought by Publish America, which isn't a good publisher, and I wouldn't recommend them. So don't go there. Night Crimes was published in 2001.
Okay.
So it's many years because I didn't write consistently because I was teaching. You know, we have a family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, teaching, and I also did freelance and other writings for the North American edition of the Jamaican Glean and stuff like that.
Was there this Night Crimes, and you talked about it briefly earlier on today's show, was there an event, because after I researched it, that Night Crimes, I was like, wow.
It's a mystery.
Was there an event that inspired, was there a real life event that happened or something?
Yes, I was coming home, you know, I taught at night when my son was all grown up, and in high school I started to teach at night and save for college for him. And on my way home one night, I was followed home for the subway, and the man followed me all the way home and up my steps. And that sort of got me thinking about someone who was being followed, and
wow.
No one believed her. So in the story, Laura Bello is an artist instead of a writer, and she's being followed, and no one believes her, not even her husband, Tony Bello, who is a sergeant of detectives in New York City Police Force, because he's, you know, he says, who would want to follow you? You're just
mm-hmm.
an art teacher. Even
mm-hmm.
if you're a good art teacher, why would someone want to follow an art teacher? But she is
right.
being followed, and she's being followed by the man in the blue baseball cap, and he's on the train with her now, and he begins to follow her everywhere she goes. He keeps vigil outside her brownstone while she and her husband and son sleep. He follows
wow.
her closet room, and when she goes upstate to her farm to escape him, he follows her there.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but even, and her husband also is caught up in his own mystery. Someone starts to poison derelicts and leaves their bodies for he and his bicycle squad to find.
Mm.
That's the two mysteries that are blended together, and that begins the world of Night Crimes.
Wow. For our off-the-shelf listeners, I just wanted to read a little from Night Crimes where it begins and it starts. He was very happy. He had forgotten how happy he could be, sitting with his new friend talking about his past life. He remembered that there was once a time when he had slept in a warm bed, snuggled against his woman's back, his arms enfolding her, his large hands cupping her around full breast. He recalled the smell of brownies baking and children giggling while they licked the spoons clean. Now his days were filled with monotony and dread, his body thin and wasted, drained by drink and heroin. Whenever he managed to drag himself out of his daze, he became aware of his urine-stained pants and dirt-encased body. But this didn't seem to matter anymore. For two nights, he had spent time reminiscing with his friend, following the dark form down moon-lit alleys and garbage-strewn streets, oblivious to the strangeness of it all. that the contrast there, where you show first his memories of a happy time, and then where he is now, the emotions, the actual change in his appearance, just the contrast there. And then from there you introduce readers to Laura. What do you think this such obvious contrast between characters, beliefs, and situations adds to a novel, Judith?
Well, I think it I think it shows the difference in characters. There, that's one of the first antagonists I'm introducing. But instead of telling you about the antagonist, I'm telling you about his victim. That's the first victim of the Death Angel, the person who kills derelicts and leaves them for Tony to find. And I'm telling you about his victim. And if you notice, he's not being killed in an inhumane way. He's befriended. This person has nothing left. And this is, it's contrasting with the way the other person is playing with Laura. He plays with her. It's like a cat and a mouse. And this person, this antagonist befriends this person. And he becomes his friend, and he actually accompanies him. And when he dies, if you read on later, he kisses him, his brow, he cleans up after him. And when the Nan finds him the next morning, he's happy. And his hand encircles empty space, and he's smiling. He's remembering his wife, his woman, and he dies happy. So although he's left on a park bench, he's almost left, he's killed with love. I know that sounds terrible, but he isn't being played with. You know, he's befriended before he died. His life had been wasted. He defecates on himself. He had been somebody, and then he turned himself into nobody. And this person, in a way, loved him. He befriended him, and he loved him. And the person with Laura is playing with her like a cat and a mouse. And so, in a way, I'm contrasting both antagonists.
Wow. We are interviewing today our special guest here on Off the Shelf. As we come down to our last 20 minutes of today's show, Judith Woolcock, she is our special guest today. And for those who might have just tuned in, and for those who have been with us since the beginning, Judith is the author of the books The Fable Singer, which we have recently just talked about, and Night Crimes, which we are talking about now. And Judith is a native of Jamaica, and she came to the United States in 1969. She attended Fordham University, where she earned her Bachelor of Arts degree, and she earned a master's degree in philosophy. Before she started writing full-time, she taught English, analytical thinking, and research skills at schools in New York City, and she's the wife of a retired New York City police officer. And if you read her stories, particularly in discussions about night crimes, I can't help but thinking some of the experiences that she might have had, and particularly one where she said she was followed home at night, find their way into the stories that she has written. Judith, I think that we have to get out and live. We were talking earlier about the material for many artists, and I definitely think a true or genuine artist comes from their life, our life experiences. I know you can sit down, and they have, as years ago, I heard about these, you can write the word escapes me just now, but there's ways to write books, sort of not like with a template, but you sit down and you can write a zillion books the same way.
A formula writing.
Formula, yes. Thank you. That's what I was thinking of. And then there's writing where it comes, the material is coming from the author themselves. So their life experience create the body material that they create with. Do you think that the best art, now I already have my opinions on it, but do you think the best art comes from those instances where the artist actually takes material consciously or subconsciously from their own perceptions and experiences and then create something with that. Do you think that's where the greatest art comes from?
Yes, I think so, but, you know, that's just my opinion. You know, someone else may have a different opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think most people would agree with me on that, you know,
mm-hmm.
that it's not formula writing that's the best. It's, you know, when you create from your own experiences and your own imagination, you know.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you may or may not hit the bestseller list, but I guarantee you, if somebody reads a story that was written by an artist who created from their own, the material inside themselves, that story is going to stay with you. That story is really going to stay with you. When did you, Judith, start writing Amazon shorts? And what are the titles of some of the Amazon shorts that you have written?
Well, Amazon has discontinued the shorts, but my first Amazon shorts was Gas Man. And it was a story I wrote a long time ago, and it's a story about an arsonist. And I can just that was published in 2007, and then it's a mystery, The Death of Betty Pinto, and that was also published in 2007. They're short stories called Amazon Shorts.
Are they still available in any form?
Not right now. but they were available as Amazon ebooks. But if anyone wants, they could. I guess they could email me. I don't know if I should give out my email, but.
Is there a website address where people could...
Yes, they could go to my website.
Okay, if you could give us the URL, please.
Okay, let me go to... I have to get up my URL right now, and then I'll give it to you. My URL is http...
You said H...
T-T-T.
Oh, okay.
You know, the usual...
Okay.
Then it's Odin, O-D-I-N.
O-D-I-N.
Dot. Pro-hosting.
Pro-hosting, okay.
Yes. Dot. You know, just email me at, I'll just give you an email. Just email me at astrologue.
Okay.
Just email astrologue. one@yahoo.com.
And I still want the website address, though. Our listeners might want to check it out. So
okay,
we've got www.odin.prohosting.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
/ and there's a tilde.
A tilde?
Yes. You know the little squiggly line.
Oh,
nine.
Okay.
Night zero one.
Okay, so
that has my other email there.
Okay, so here we go. For our off-the-shelf listeners, because I know you want to go over there and check out Judith Wilcott Colombo's work and read some of her excerpts, it's www.odin.prohosting.com/ the little squiggly line, which is above it's right next to the number one on your keyboard to the left of it, and it's then night 01. Odin.prohosting.com/
right.
The squiggly line next to the left of the number one on your keyboard, night 01. Go, and you can read her excerpts. She's an English teacher. Her imagination and her teaching background really make her one excellent, excellent writer, believe me. Which is easier for you to create, Judith, a short story or a full-length novel? And what makes you say this?
I don't know. I guess I've always more often think in novels, like the one I'm creating now, and I found the short stories harder. And I have no idea why.
I've heard...
Because every time I start writing, it gets longer and longer and longer because I keep thinking of more parts to it. but I think I'm going to start trying to write shorter stories. I have a series in my mind. There's just this boy that keeps talking to me. And it's called The Brooklyn Tales, and I'm thinking of writing them as a series of short stories. So we'll see how that develops when I finish this novel I'm working on.
Tell us about the novel. What can you give us a glimpse into it, and when you expect
that? It's called, I had written it before and then started sending it out, and then I took it back because I didn't like it, and now rewriting it. And I'm not sure of the title, so I can't tell you yet. But it's another detective story, and most of it is set in a mental asylum, and it's about a detective called Danny Ferguson, and she's sent there to to uncover. There's a couple of police officers who were killed, and they were all connected to this asylum, and she's sent there to uncover why they were killed. And that's sort of what I'm telling you now.
Wow, you're a mystery writer. It sounds like you're somewhat of a mystery writer, although The Fable Singer, it's got elements, all stories have an element of mystery to them, but Night Crimes and the story you're working on now seem to have more of that element to them.
Yeah.
Being that you are a writer and you were an English teacher, what steps can authors take to strengthen their stories and make them more appealing to readers and to editors?
Well, more appealing to readers and to editors. I guess to read what's out there, what's more popular, what people like. But I think ultimately you have to write for yourself, but also more appealing to editors. Make sure that you write what people want to read. Write for yourself, but write what people want to read. And also, make sure that you have someone, when I'm finished with this work, someone to read over what you, you know, thing is what I'm writing, and I realize that you can give your book to a lot of other people, a lot of other writers, and they'll tell you, well, don't write this and don't write that and take this out and take that out and write this way and write that way. But they're really imposing their writing style on you.
Mm.
And you can't listen to that. You can listen to a certain extent because maybe they're right and maybe they're wrong. But ultimately, you have to write your way.
Yes.
But what you really need to do, write your way, write it the way you want to do it, take some advice and, you know, take what you need and, you know, take what you don't want. But then send it to someone who will just look at it, not impose their writing style on it, but will correct your spelling and see what typos you make. Because don't care how good a writer you are, how wonderful your grammar is, no one can totally proofread their work. Because whatever you do, you're going to read what you should have written and not what you actually wrote. You know, because you're going to make a few mistakes.
Yes.
So get
yes.
someone to proofread your work, and that's what an editor wants.
Yeah,
that's why you please an editor, because they're not going to edit anymore. So send it to them, and if it's what people are reading and it's not riddled with mistakes and typos, you know, you're on the right foot.
I thank you for sharing that. So many authors have given similar advice to strengthen your writing. Read books written by authors that you admire, not to start to write in their style, but to just, I don't know, I've heard so many people say it, and I agree, it does something in a writer to, it's like being an athlete and watching a great athlete perform, or a singer, or an actor, or an actress. You pick up some of their skills the more you acquaint yourself with it, so that just comes naturally. But also, getting a good editor not somebody who's going to change your voice or really rewrite the story. They're not going to do that. They look for grammar, structure. They might tell you things like, you know, people didn't talk like this in the United States in 1970, so you might want to check your dialogue.
Yes, exactly.
Or some of your...
You know, even if it doesn't have to be an editor in the end, you know, or even another writer, get a good friend, a friend who, you know, can knows grammar, just to read your work and make sure you wrote what you really... Sometimes, like, if I read the stuff, I'm reading what I know should be there, not what sometimes is actually there. You know, who understands, you know, the nuances of language, just to read it to make sure, you know, because sometimes I'll write a perfect, perfect paragraph, and then I'll go over and say, ooh, maybe you shouldn't have said that, and I'll change it a little, and in changing it, that's where the mistakes creep in. You know, I'll leave a comma where it should have been, but it shouldn't be anymore now. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it has to be taken out and stuff like that. So get someone just to give a final read and, you know, make sure that, say, hey, look, you should have taken that comma out. Hey, you forgot to take out that quotation mark and stuff like that. Just have a final read before you send it off. And a writer can't write unless you're a reader, too. A lot of people think you can write and not read. You must read. If you're a writer, you must read.
Yeah, and this is something I've heard. I know as a child I was a voracious reader, and I still read. I just love to read a good story.
Yeah.
There are people, you know, even with e-books, print-on-demand, self-publishing, you know, and then you can go through the mainstream publishers as well. There's still people who struggle and think, man, could I ever publish a book? What advice, Judith, would you give to writers who are trying to get published for the first time? And it could be in a magazine, a newspaper, on the internet, or as a book author. What advice would you give to them on how they can get the attention of editors so that they can get their manuscripts published?
Well, you know, it's the same thing I just told you, you know. You know, try to find an editor that you think would be interested in your type of work and send it out over and over again. Don't give up. You know, you hear stories about, like, the person with the Twilight novels. How many times? I think 50 times she sent it out. You know, but then there is no, there are lots of people who also self-published, you know, and made good. You know, so don't, the only advice I have is practice and practice your craft and don't give up.
Wow.
You know, and make sure you're sending it to the right editor. I had a lot of advice, you know, from people. Well, just try that person. You never know. Even if the person says, we don't take this, you know, they may take you. Well, you know, I don't think that's what I did with the first book, you know. Just wasting your time. Make sure they really take mysteries,
yes.
You know, and send it to them. You know, there are lots of mystery people out there. Try, you know, so don't waste the people who don't take mysteries or who might take mysteries. You know, because you're wasting their time and your time, you know, and just don't give up.
Yeah, that's such excellent advice.
And,
I love.
Yeah.
Keep working at your craft, and I love when you say, don't give up.
And don't give up.
Mm-hmm. And
you know?
Judith, who are some of your favorite writers, and what is it about their work that you appreciate?
I think Toni Morrison is one of my favorite writers. I like Jane Austen. She's one of my favorite writers. Anne Perry. Ruth Randall. Walter Mosley.
Okay.
I have a variety of writers. I'm sorry. I keep clearing my throat.
No. And what is it about their work, though, that you appreciate? What keeps bringing you back again and again?
I love their characters, you know. I liked Faulkner. I love their works. I like the characters. It's hard to say. I liked the way Toni Morrison's words flow. I like many of her characters. Some of her books are difficult. They're very painful to read. Like Beloved was very, very painful.
Yes, yes.
You know, it was, oh, it was painful, but it was beautiful at the same time.
Mm.
It was painful, and I don't know, you know.
Her books for me were, I tried once, I think it was Tar Baby, I tried, I was not able to. I do appreciate Alice Walker's work. I just think she goes so deep into her characters. And
yeah, well, Alice is a wonderful writer, but I can't read her. There's so much hanger that, you know, I can't read her work. But I can understand, I can read her that this is a wonderful writer.
Yes.
Toni Morrison, I can appreciate her work. I can read it. I can love it. And some works I can get into, like jazz, and read it, and that's sort of a mystery. And
mm-hmm.
you know, and oh, another one of my writers, Maxine Ong Kingston. I like her work.
Okay.
And you know, a lot of my brain is sort of frozen now.
And Joyce Carol Oates and
yes,
Jay California Cooper and Jamaica Kincaid. I do like Jamaica Kincaid's work, although I don't think she's put anything out in a couple
of
years.
I like her work. I like At the Bottom of the Sea.
Mm-hmm.
I have a blog that I forgot. I haven't gone to it in a while, but I have a list of works that I review.
Okay.
And a lot of those, I'll send you, if you're interested in, I can send you the link there to read my reviews.
Okay.
I haven't done it in a long time because for a year I've been very sick. And I had an infection, just blew my asthma out. But
I'm glad you're doing better, Judith, and I appreciate you sticking in for this interview. We only have 3 minutes left. Before we do wrap up the interview, I wanted to ask you, so our off-the-shelf listeners who want to, of course, visit you at your website, www.odin.prohosting.com, with a little squiggly line, which is to the left of the number one on your keyboard, Night 01. You can go read excerpts from Judith Wilcott Colombo's books, The Fable Singer and Night Crimes, and she's working on a new story, which hopefully will be out maybe with this year or next year sometime. So she hasn't put a deadline on when it's going to be out, but we look forward to that. It's also going to be a mystery. Judith, are you on any social networks? And if so, can you tell our off-the-shelf listeners where they can find you online other than at the website?
Well, I am on Facebook, but I keep that for family, more
okay.
family and friends. I haven't gotten on. I belong to Red River Writers, and I think that's a good thing. Actually, if anyone is a writer and wants to be a writer, I think Red River Writers is a good thing to join.
Hmm. What are some of the services? We don't have much time left, but what are some services that are offered there at Red River Writing? Do they just critique other writers' work? Or?
Well, there's a good thing for mystery writers, and I don't know if they critique your work, but they have discussions, and you can offer your views, and you can lurk around and get great ideas and you know, even ask questions, and I think that's very useful.
Okay. What last words of encouragement or advice, with just a minute to go, what last words of encouragement or advice would you like to leave with our listeners here today at Off the Shelf, Judith?
Well, I think one of the great encouragement and advice is, the only one encouragement I can give is never give up. And advice is, if you can join a writing group, you know, to have other writers to exchange ideas with, you know, to exchange your, so you're not alone in your craft.
Okay.
Get someone, even if you don't have a writing group, get a friend you can, you know, show your ideas to read, to talk to. But the most important thing is just practice.
Okay. We are so happy to have Judith here with us, and we appreciate her grace as she was here today with her throat being a little bit not totally in sync. So we really do appreciate Judith Wilcott Colombo, the author of the books The Fable Singer, The Night Crimes, and Night Crimes. And she is working on a new story Even Now, which we look forward to hearing about. You can visit her online at www.odin.prohosting.com/ the little squiggly line to the left of the number one on your keyboard, Night 01. She is a very talented and gifted and creative writer, so please stop in and visit her. I want to thank you all for being here with us this afternoon on Off the Shelf. It's snowing lightly outside here in Philadelphia, and we want to thank Judith Woolcott Colombo. Please go support her and her books, The Fable Singer and Night Crimes, which you can get at Amazon.com or at her website. And we look forward to seeing you back here at Off the Shelf next Saturday at 11 o'clock in the morning. Thank you. Remember, you're so blessed, so truly loved, and you are so valued, and we appreciate you. Bye for now. And Judith, I'll shoot you an email.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.